Dr. Don Clark joins us now from Garden Valley, Texas. Don, a biochemist, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, and just a good friend of the station. Well, you didn't have electricity last week. We couldn't talk to you, right?
Did not have electricity. It was out for a whole 12 hours. Hmm. But there were many, many areas across northern Texas that were out for several days. Trees are falling like crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, the ground is so soaked.
Speaking of things falling like crazy, evolution seems to be falling like crazy. I'm reading this story about, this is from the Institute for Creation Research. It starts out by saying an evolutionary website. I presume they're talking about the Center for Genomic Regulation, which is a really impressive title. As it just published a groundbreaking study that identifies, claims the existence for an uncomplicated, simple creature that's never been seen before, and they've analyzed the DNA. How can that be?
Just left it laying around somewhere.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, man has a great imagination. God created us with imagination.
Yes, he did. That's true.
And we'll explain away anything, you know, except that there is a God, and we are accountable to him. But, yeah, this is one of those stories that from the very beginning, they have made the whole thing up.
Yeah, they're explaining something that isn't there.
That's not there. So they have this magic creature that supposedly existed 700 million years ago.
Sounds.
An organism that existed 700 million years ago. And how do they know this? Well, it had to. Things evolved, and we see the end result. So therefore, this creature had to be there, because in order to explain the diversity and the number of different creatures that we have today, you had to have a rudimentary creature that had two equal halves of DNA, basically. And let me explain. This is how they explain it. So this creature had a set of DNA that was going to be the primary set for the function of the organism. And so every essential aspect of life and being able to move and that type of stuff was carried in the fundamental DNA section. And then there was this other section, this other half, that was going to be allowed to evolve and to experiment with life and to see what worked and to see what didn't work. But at the same time, the creature, whatever it evolved into, would live because it had the fundamental part associated with it. And so that's the mechanism by which evolution obviously occurred, because without it, as the creationists have been saying for eons, you couldn't evolve into a new creature because you needed every aspect of the creature to be there before it evolved. But this explanation now tries to overcome that objection by creationists and people who are hopefully logical, by saying, oh, yeah, there was such a creature that kept the fundamental pieces. And then there were these other things, that this other half of the DNA. So that's basically what this article is about. And so we go from the 700 million year old remarkable. It's a remarkable creature. And this is a breakthrough study. Well, there's no studying about it. There is nothing that they studied.
Well, I hate to just laugh at them, because we look at advanced mathematics. It seems like it's possible that mathematics can explain or anticipate something existing. But can they reverse it and say something existed in the past? I mean, this sounds mathematical, not chemical, even though they're talking DNA here. What are they looking at?
Well, they look at some creatures and they say, we know now there are conservative genes and genes that, if you compare certain types of genes from one organism to the next, there are these genes that are called conservative genes because certain proteins are key to the functionality of any organism. And so if you match them up, both protein sequence or DNA sequence, they're more similar to from one species to the next, or one organism to the next. And so I can understand why they might think the way they're thinking, that 700 million years ago, there had to be the starting creature that allowed for these non-variant proteins in DNA, for example. But it is a fantastic stretch to say that the other half of the organism, now, the remarkable thing about this organism was it was the first organism, the first animal that had a front, a back, a top, and a bottom. Isn't that amazing? That it had a front and a back, a top, and a bottom.
Wow.
I mean, it was a groundbreaking adaptation to have those pieces. Anyway, which we eventually, obviously, inherited. And it was also this binary type of creature. That is, you can take a plane through the creature, and you, in the case of us, for example, we got a left side and a right side, and our left side kind of looks like our right side. And so we have two eyes and two ears, but only one mouth and a nose, but the nose has two nostrils and, you know, things like that. We got two lungs, but only one heart. And on it goes. So this was just the start of being able to differentiate into us eventually, is where we're trying to go.
Now, did they work backwards? Because you and we have talked several times about each generation bringing about a variation in DNA. And it and this relates again to Dr. Don's theory of devolution, that each generation is not quite up to par with the previous generation in some way, because these changes, these mutations, take us downhill. So are they? But there's an interval. I mean, are they like measuring generations to get back to this basic creature, and somehow that adds up to 700 million years? That sounds pretty preposterous.
It is preposterous, and I don't know how they came up with 700 million versus, 50 million versus whatever. You'd have to probably go read the original article.
Evolutionists,
I don't know if they would give you any additional information.
Evolution has just recently been accused of arbitrarily deciding that the universe is now twice as old as they used to say it was, because that helps explain some things that they have concluded. Unless they do that, there's no valid explanation for what they're claiming. So obviously, the universe must be twice as old as we used to think it was. This is along the same kind of line.
That's obvious. I mean, even though, the universe originally was based on the furthest object that we could see, or at least a cluster of galaxies that we could see, and perhaps, they can see further now with the telescopes out in space. And so if we could see further, maybe the universe is really older than what we originally thought. But here's the key to evolution. So the evolutionists need more time. When Darwin came up with his theory, they thought that, maybe we got 10,000 years or 50,000 years of Earth's history, but that wasn't clearly enough. So they had to add more time. And so they've been playing this game of adding more time. It's called deep time. And if you can get the time frame long enough, people will be more likely to believe unbelievable scenarios, such as what we have in this article. So we need the time in order to confuse the real evidence and what is the real evidence? Well, the real evidence we look around today, and even in the fossil records, all of this discussion goes away if you just believe what's written in the Bible. The real evidence states that, hey, we've got all these creatures. Of course, we have different species of birds, and we have different species of horses and cows and all of this. But the different species, to call something a species versus what we would call, from the creation point of view, a kind, is a variation on a kind. And so our kind is more akin to a family in the genealogy of things. So it's a higher organism. And then as time has passed by, and that time, obviously, for a creationist, is not that long, then we get variations. So we've got birds with different colors or birds with different shapes, and so we call them a different species, even though they're the basic kind of animal. We've got all kinds of finches, for example, but it's really still a finch, right? It hasn't evolved into an eagle. I mean, and an eagle is, you maybe have different species of eagles, but they're all eagles, and same with rabbits and same with
dogs. In other words, a rose by any other name is still a rose.
And the other article that you had mentioned as a possibility for today, which was even not as strong as this article, on Neanderthal. So the whole question of Neanderthal, was it a different species of Homo sapiens? It's not a sapien. And so did Neanderthals intermarry with humans, which is the main criteria, if you will, for determining what's in the same kind of animal. Does it interbreed with itself and can generate progeny, which can then breed? And the answer is, hey, yeah, obviously we got humans that have Neanderthal DNA in them. And so Neanderthals clearly interbred with what we call the modern man or Homo sapiens today. All that tells me is that, you know what, Neanderthals are human. Mm-hmm. They were human from the very beginning.
Well, the substance of that article asked the question, Neanderthals could talk, but how sophisticated was their language? Well, I guess they look at cave art. I mean, they didn't write books. I mean, there's no book I know of by a Neanderthal.
Well, how do you know? I mean, we don't know.
That's true.
All right, they lived in caves in Europe, in Germany, and in various places. The better explanation for the Neanderthal or Neanderthals is that they migrated, obviously, from the Middle East upward and over, and probably are descendants of the Japhites, because that's where the Japhites, most of the Europeans are Japhites. They came from that particular family group. So they migrated, and their patriarchs, they were older, and maybe they were the first migrants to that area. And they, you know, while because it was a much colder climate than the Middle East, even back then, they had to make do with whatever environment they had to deal with, and living in caves could have been one of those such things. But to say that they are completely a different species, or at least different than humans, is really stretching the point, and they're trying to fit again into the evolutionary story, as opposed to the plain fact of the matter. If it looks like a human, certainly if it can intermarry with a human, then it is a human.
And well, this is a live science story, and just about every article I've seen from those folks can end with the phrase, but we really don't know for sure.
They don't know for sure because it's all made up. I mean, this is kind of what we observe. There are cave paintings, but did they really do the cave painting, or was it a different group? And it's like, okay, you find bones there, you find evidence of human activity, and then you're not attributing it to the group that actually was in that area. It's kind of crazy.
The lead-in is that Neanderthals could talk, but they likely couldn't use or understand metaphors. How do you conclude that? What evidence tells you that?
Exactly. What evidence tells you that? From their paintings? Let's say you took up painting, right? You haven't painted before, and you're going to take up painting. What are you going to paint? You're going to paint the things that you see around you,
It makes sense.
Let's say you have a horse. Okay, mm-hmm. you'll probably mm-hmm. try painting the horse, and it's going to be pretty primitive because you haven't developed your skill yet of painting, you know, different techniques and everything for making rounded edges as opposed to squared edges or just a stick figure or something. And so when you look at these cave paintings, and even the cave paintings in other parts of the world, they appear to be rather primitive, but these people had little to work with. And by the way, they had to work hard in order to eat and survive, so they didn't have a whole lot of time to put into this. And then during a winter where they were probably more locked into their cave, then they probably had more time to add a little art to the wall. And it's interesting that man wants to make his environment artful. And that is a quality of God. Being able to be creative is a quality that we inherit from God. It's one of those godly characteristics, you know, that have come down to us through the Bible. So all of this stuff, whether you're talking about Neanderthal, whether you're talking about, you know, you get down into the DNA and the genomes and you're trying to separate functional DNA from non-functional DNA. And, you know, I don't know how you do that. And then they get down to the bottom of this. Now we're back to the genome article. You get back to down to the bottom of it. And they said, oh, well, yes, it's obvious that the functional had to develop this specialty, kind of these promoter regions on the DNA, where an activator protein sits, the enhancer protein, for example, binds on the DNA, and this then causes transcription to take place. So there's a special protein that sits on your DNA, and when it sits on the DNA, that portion of the DNA gets copied. But as we go up the evolutionary framework from animals and ultimately to man, we have so many of these promoter locations that it is crazy to think that these enhancers just kind of evolved, because each one has a specific purpose. They even conclude in their statement here, but for the evolutionist, how protein enzymes evolved is perhaps the greatest unsolved problem. It's as if they solved any problem, but enzymes themselves are even a greater problem, because we don't know why an enzyme would exist. Well, if you didn't have enzymes, you wouldn't have life. Enzymes are the things. You got two types of enzymes. You got enzymes that build things, and you got enzymes that tear down things. So if you take in a fat, for example, and you need the fat for energy, then you have enzymes that chew up the fat and turn it into energy, and ultimately you get water and CO2 out of it. And oh boy, the CO2 is a problem, because that's polluting the environment. But you need these things for life, and they can't understand how even enzymes evolved.
Well, the solution seems so simple. They didn't evolve, they were designed. Isn't that eminently logical, even if you can't explain the origin? I mean, the evidence that they were created intentionally according to a plan, even if you can't, if you don't know the creator, if you don't know the planner, it's still logically apparent that there is a creator.
Well, there is. Yes, exactly. It is apparent unless your mind is blinded, unless your eyes are blinded, like mine was before I came to. I had the evolutionary story down pat before I became a Christian. And then the first book of the Bible that I started reading was Genesis. And I read a commentary by Henry Morris, the Genesis record. And I'm reading Genesis, I'm saying, this is the only way it could possibly have happened. But I had to become a Christian first. I had to become a believer first because my eyes were blinded. If your eyes are blinded and you don't read what the Bible actually says, and understand it. And the understanding actually comes through, I believe, through the Holy Spirit being giving us understanding into God's word. Then you have to come up with other explanations as to how we got here. That's a fundamental question of man. How did we get here? That's one question. And then what is our purpose is another question. And then where are we going? Those are three very basic, important questions that evolutionists will never answer. How did we get here? We have no idea. But we think there was this animal, this creature 700 million years ago, and this is how it started. So we can come up with stories, but we can't come up with anything satisfying that says, okay, this is really how we got here. God said, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Well, that one statement tells you, okay, there's such a creature, or there's such a person, if you will, of God. And who is God? He is the creator of everything. That defines who God is. He's the creator. In the beginning, God created. So he is the creator. And he created everything. So he created us and everything. And then he gives detail in chapter one, and then in more detail in chapter two, how he created man. And the detail in chapter two says that he molded us, you know, he molded man from the dust of the earth. He formed man from the dust of the earth. But man didn't actually become a living being until he breathed the breath of life into him. And what is that breath of life? I believe it's the soul and the spirit. So even if you have the body, that body is not living because it doesn't have the soul and the spirit. Even when Jesus was on the cross, for example, he didn't actually die until he gave up the ghost. His body, even though as broken as it was, and the amount of blood that he lost during the scourging, he didn't die until he himself gave up the ghost. So that's an important aspect that the evolutionist will never find and never be able to explain, because it is outside of science and in the realm of spirituality. And if you don't want to grasp spirituality, of which we are two-thirds, at least a third spirit, third of our being, is we got the physical form and we've got the soul, which is the interconnection between the body and the spirit. And if we don't latch on to the latter, that there is such a thing as a spirit world, then we're missing life, and we're missing a greater part of life. And the best part of life, actually, is the spiritual side.
Let me try another statement. This may be a gross oversimplification, but maybe it'll help make the point in my mind and in the minds of some others. The Bible is true, and it's about the why of things. Science is continually trying to explain the how without understanding or absorbing or agreeing to the why, which means they have no basis for understanding the complete picture. And science is fabricating stories like we just talked about today because they don't admit to the why.
Well, they can't, because we've been told over and over again, and I've been told in debates with evolutionist that, you know, we gotta keep things in the box. You know, we can't come out of this physical realm. And science deals with explaining the physical world around us. It doesn't explain the spiritual world around us. So I can understand why a scientist wants to stay within the physical realm, because that's what we can see, that's what we can touch, that's what we can feel. We can feel that. Now, Einstein took it a little bit further. He said, there is this stuff called space-time, and it's really space that is the essence of our physical world. And then we think of space being nothing there, but space was the substance in which God spoke. All the material world that we see is just vibrations and these subatomic particles circling around each other. And light is just the energy form that travels through space. And Einstein said, well, matter interacts with space and causes space to be curved. So there has to be something to space. And then, sure enough, years and years later, we find out that, hey, Einstein's theory of relativity is true, because space is curved, and we can see it has lens properties if you're looking at a distant light, for example, and here at Earth at a heavy object. So anyway,
see, we've covered a lot of ground, but we've gotten back to a mathematical equation now. E equals mc squared. Yeah, right?
There you go.
It does.
Yes.
Don Clark, a member of the board of Creation Moments, I want to recommend their website to you. It's creationmoments.com. And there you'll find lots of information, scientific information, that explains and trains you how to explain yourself the biblical story of creation. You might want to pay them a visit, creationmoments.com. Don, thanks so much. We'll look forward to next week.
All righty. Very good.